Chapter 13. Legacy of Lorgar. Proposition. Honor Duel. As Skrall delved deeper into the furious abyss, the world around him got stranger. The ship was the size of a city, and just like a city, it had its hidden corners and curiosities, its beautiful clean-cut vistas, and its dismal bordellos of decay. Though supposedly newly fashioned, the vessel felt very old. Its concomitant parts had spent so many decades being built and rendered in the forges of Mars that they had acquired a history of their own before the battleship was ever finished, let alone launched. It had a presence, too, a kind of impalpable sentience that exuded from its steel walls and clung to its corridors and conduits like gossamer threads of being. Skrall passed under a support beam, his chain axe held out warily in front of him, and saw the signature of a Mechanicum shipwright inscribed in binary. The passageway of steel looked like an avenue in a wealthy spire top, the low ceiling supported by keratids and columns. A nest of shanties, perhaps the lodgings of the menials who had once laboured to build the ship, their ramshackle homes abandoned between two generatorium housings. The vessel was intricate and immense. The world-eater saw chambers he could only assume were for worship, with altars and rows of prayer books etched in the word of Lorgar. A temple, half-wrought in stone and symbiotically merged with deep red steel, was housed in a massive false amphitheatre, its columned front and carved pediment providing a medieval milieu. The wide threshold was lit by braziers of violet fire. Skrall thought he had seen something moving inside, and took care to avoid it. The world-eater had no time for distractions. The denizens of the furious abyss hunted him, and even in a ship as vast as it, the chase would not last indefinitely. Melter bombs and belts of crack grenades clanked against his armour as he moved, reminding him of their presence and the urgency with which he needed to put them to some use. In a fleeting moment, when Skrall had paused to try and get some kind of bearing, he thought of Antigis. The Ultramarines believed themselves to be philosophers, or kings, or members of the galaxy's rightful ruling class. They did not appreciate the purity of purpose that could only be found in the crucible of war, as did Skrall's legion. They were most concerned with forging their own empire around Macragge. Antigis had demonstrated his warrior spirit, though, fighting and dying in the cauldron of war, driven by simple duty. Skrall mourned his passing with a moment of silence, honouring his valorous deeds, and in that moment he made a promise of revenge. A great set of double doors, carved from lacquered black wood, blocked the world-eater's path. Skrall could not turn back from the barrier, incongruous like so much of what he had witnessed on the furious abyss. Instead, he pushed the door open. There was light inside, but still the silence persisted, so he entered into what was a long, low chamber. Beyond it was a gallery full of artifacts. Tapestries lined the walls, displaying the victories and history of the word-bearers. He saw a comet crashing down to their native earth of Colchis, and a golden child emerging from the conflagration left from its impact. He saw temples, their spires lost in a swathe of red cloud, and lines of pilgrims trailing off into infinity. It was a world stained with tragedy, the gilded palaces and cathedrals tarnished, and every statue of past religious dynasts missing an arm or an eye. In the middle of this fallen world, like a single point of hope, was the smouldering crater of their saviour's arrival. The ceiling was a single endless fresco depicting Lorgar's conquest of Colchis. Here it was a corrupt place cleansed by the Primarch, whose image shone with a light of reason and command as robed prophets and priests prostrated themselves before him. Armies laid down their arms and crowds cheered in adulation. At the far end of the museum, the story ended with Colchis restored and Lorgar a scholar-hero writing down his history and philosophy. This epilogue ended with a truth that Skrall knew, the Emperor coming to the world to find Lorgar, just as he had come to the world-eater's forgotten homeworld to install Angron as the Legion's Primarch. The paintings, frescoes and tapestries gave way to trophies displayed on plinths and suspended from the vaulted ceiling. Skrall ignored them and pressed on. "You look upon the soul of our Legion, brother!" boomed a voice suddenly through the vox casters in the gallery. Skrall backed up against the wall, which was painted with an image of Lorgar debating with a host of wizened old men in a Colchian amphitheatre. I am Admiral Zadkiel of the Word Bearers, said the voice, when the World Eater answered with silence. You are aboard my ship. Traitor Horsen, does your entire legion cower behind words? Skrull snapped, unable to contain his anger. Such a curious term, World Eater, the voice of Zadkiel replied, ignoring the slight. You dub us traitors, and yet we have never been anything but loyal to our Primarch. Then your lord is also a traitor, Skrull growled in return, hunting the shadows for any sign of movement, any hint that he was being stalked. Your own Lord Angron calls him brother. How then can Lorgar be regarded as a traitor? Skrull cast his gaze around, trying to locate the Pictor observing him or the Voxcaster broadcasting Zadkiel's voice. Then he has betrayed my Primarch and in turn his legion. Angron was a slave, said Zadkiel. The very fact shames him. He despises what he was and what other men made of him. It is from this that his anger, that the anger of all world-eaters, stems. Certain that there was no one else in there with him, Skrull started moving cautiously through the gallery, looking for some way out other than the double doors at either end. He would not be swayed by Zadkiel's words, and focused instead on the hot line of rage building inside him, using it to galvanize himself. I saw the echo of that anger at Baca Triumvirum, said Zadkiel. It was enacted against the menials that drowned in their own blood at the hands of you and your brothers. Skrull paused. He had thought no one knew of the slaughter he had perpetrated at the dock. Angron sought to bring his brothers closer to him in that aspect, did he not? Zadkiel was relentless, his words like silken blades penetrating the world-eater's defences. It was the Emperor's censure that forbade it. The very being that holds you and your slave Primarch in his thrall. For what is Angron, if not a slave? What accolades has he won that the Angel or Guillemin have not? What reward has Angron been given that can equal the Empire of Ultramar or the stewardship of the Imperial Palace granted to Dorne? Nothing. He fights for nothing save by the command of another. What can such a man claim to be, other than a slave? We are not slaves! We will never be slaves! Skrull cried in anger and carved his chain axe through one of the museum's stone pillars. It is the truth, Zadkiel persisted. But you are not alone, brother. Yours is not the only legion to have been thus forsaken, he continued. We word-bearers worshipped him, worshipped the Emperor as a god. But he mocked our divinity with reproach and reprimand, just as he mocks you. Skrull ignored him. His faith in his legion and his Primarch would not easily be undone. This word-bearer's rhetoric meant nothing. Duty and rage, these were the things he focused on as he sought to escape from the chamber. Look before you, world-eater, Zadkiel began again. There you will find what you seek. Despite himself, Skrull looked. There, within an ornate glass cabinet, forged of obsidian and brass and once wielded by Angron's hand, was a chain axe. Decked with teeth of glinting black stone, its haft wrapped in the skin of some monstrous lizard, he knew it instinctively to be Brazen Tooth, the former blade of his Primarch. The weapon, magnificent in its simple brutality, had taken the head of the queen of the Scandrain Xenos and cleaved through a horde of greenskins, following the arch-vandal of Pasiphae. A feral world, teeming with tribal psychopaths, had rebelled against the imperial truth, and at the mere sight of Brazen Tooth in Angron's hand, they had given up their revolt and kneeled to the world-eaters. Until the forging of Gore Father and Gore Child, the twin axes Angron now wielded, Brazen Tooth had been as much a symbol of Angron's relentlessness and independence as it was a mere weapon. Gifted unto Lorgar, it symbolizes our alliance, Zadkiel told him. Angron pledged himself to our cause, and with him all the world eaters. Skrull regarded the chain axe. Thick veins stuck out in his forehead beneath his skull helmet, exacerbated by the heat of his impotent wrath. It is written, world-eater, that you and all your brothers will join with us when the fate of the galaxy is decided. The Emperor is lost. He is ignorant of the true power of the universe. We will embrace it. Word-bearer, Skrull said, his lip curled derisively. You talk too much. The world-eater shattered the cabinet with a blow from his fist and seized Brazen Tooth. Without pause, he squeezed the tongue of brass in the chain axe's haft, and the teeth whirred hungrily. The weapon was far too heavy and unbalanced for Skrull to wield. It would have taken Angron's own magnificent strength to use it. It was all he could do to keep the bucking chain blade level as he put his body weight behind it and hurled it into the nearest wall. Brazen Tooth ripped into a fresco depicting Lorgar as an educator of the benighted, thousands of ignorant souls bathing in the halo of enlightenment that surrounded him. The image was shredded, and the weapon, free of Skrull's hands, bored its way through, casting sparks as it chewed up the metal beneath. "You're doomed, Zadkiel!" bellowed Skrull over the screech of the chainblade. "The Emperor will learn of your treachery. He'll send your brothers to bring you back in chains. He'll send the War Master!" The world-eater hurled himself through the ragged tear in the museum wall and fell through into a tangled mess of cabling and metal beyond. Zadkiel's laughter tumbled after him from the voxcaster. Zadkiel switched off the picked screens, adorning the small security console at the rear of the temple. "Tell me, Chaplain, is everything prepared?" Ixalan, decked in his full regalia, including vestments of deep crimson, nodded and gestured towards a circle, drawn from a paste mixed with Colchian soil and the blood that had been drained from the body of the ultramarine, Antigues. The Astarte's inert body lay at its nexus, his cuirass removed, and his chest levered open to reveal the congealed vermilion mass of his organs. Symbols had been scratched on the floor around him using his blood. His helmet had been removed, too, and his head lolled back, glassy-eyed, its mouth open, as if in awe of the ritual it would facilitate in death. "It is ready, as you ordered," uttered Ithkalon, the chaplain's tone approaching relish. Zadkiel smiled thinly and then looked up at the sound of shuffling feet. An old, bent figure ascended the steps at the temple entrance, and the candles on the floor flickered against its cowl and robe as it entered between the pillars. "Astropath Kurzan," said Zadkiel. The astropath pulled back his hood, revealing hollow sockets in place of his eyes, as inflicted by the soul-blinding.
"I am at your service," he hissed through cracked lips.
"You know your role in this."
"I have studied it well, my lord,"
Kurzan replied, leaning heavily on a gnarled cane of dark wood as he shuffled towards Antigues' corpse. Kurzan knelt down and held his hands over the body. The astropath smirked as he felt the last wreaths of heat bleeding from it.
"An Astartes,"
he muttered.
"Indeed," added Ithkalon, "you'll find his scalp has been removed. Then we can begin. I will require what is left after this is done," added Ixalan.
"Don't worry, Chaplain," said Zadkiel. "You'll have his body for your surgery. Kurzan," he added, switching his gaze to the astropath, "you may proceed." Zadkiel threw a book in front of him. Kurzan felt its edges, ran his fingers over its binding, the ancient vellum of its pages, and breathed deep of its musk, redolent with power. His spidery digits, so sensitive from a lifetime of blindness, scurried across the ink and read with ease. The script was distinctive and known to him.
"What's... what secrets?"
he whispered in awe.
"This is written by your hand, Admiral. What was it that dictated this to you?"
"His name," said Zadkiel, "is Wusorik, and we are about to honour the pact he has made with us." In the hours that followed, the warp was angry. It was wounded. It bled half-formed emotions like something undigested. Hatred that was too unfocused to be pure, love without an object, obsession over nothing, and gouts of oblivion without form. It quaked, It thrashed as if being forced into something unwilling or trying to hold on to something dear to it. The wrathful was thrown around on the towering waves that billowed up through the layers of reality and threatened to snap the spindly anchor line of reason that kept the ship intact. The quake subsided. The predators that had homed in on the disturbance scented the corpses of their fellow warp sharks in the wrathful and hastily slunk back into the abyss. The wrathful continued on its way, following eddies left by the wake of the furious abyss. "Has there been any change?" asked Cestus as he approached Zafrax. The banner-bearer stood outside the medical bay, looking in at the prone form of Motep, laid as if slumbering on a slab of metal. "None, sire. He has not stirred since he fell after the battle." The ultramarine captain had recently been tended to by the Rothful's medical staff, an injury sustained to his arm that he had not realized he had suffered, making its presence felt as he had gone to Motep's aid. In the absence of a dead Liradis, the treatment was rudimentary but satisfactory. The bodies, what was left of them, of the Astartes, two of the Bloodclaws included, had been taken to the ship's morgue. Cestus's mind still reeled at what he'd witnessed on the lance decks and the powers that the Thousand Sun had unleashed. Truly, there was no doubt as to his practicing psychics. That in itself left an altogether different and yet more pressing question. Bryngar. The Wolfguard had also been down in the lance decks, though Cestus was not aware of it until the battle was over and had banished three of the Warpspawn with his blood claws. The artifice of the Fenrisian rune priests in their fashioning of Felltooth was to thank for it. For once, reunited at the centre of the deck, Bryngar had curtly disclosed how the creatures parted easily before the blade and fled from the Space Wolf's fury. The Ultramarine believed that some of the account was embellished so that it might become worthy of a saga, but he did not doubt the veracity at the heart of Bryngar's words. It mattered not. Whatever the Wolfguard intended to do about Motep, and indeed Cestus, he would do regardless. Right now, the Ultramarine captain had greater concerns, namely that the traitor had been broken. For Zafrax had discovered his shattered body in the isolation chamber, but that whatever secrets he had divulged were denied to them while Motep was incapacitated. It felt like a cruel irony.
"Do you know what we do with witches on Fenris, Ultramarine?"
Cestus turned at the voice and saw Bryngar standing behind him, glowering through the glass at Motep.
"We cut the tendons in their arms and legs, then we throw them in the sea to the mercy of Mother Fenris."
Cestus moved into the Space Wolf's path.
"This is not Fenris, brother."
Bryngar smiled mirthlessly, as if at some faded remembrance.
"No, it is not," he said, locking his gaze with Cestus. "You give your sanction to this warp dabbler, and in so doing have twice besmirched my honour. I will not let his presence stand on this ship, nor will I let these deeds go unreckoned."
The Space Wolf tore a charm hanging from his cuirass and tossed it at the Ultramarine's feet. Cestus looked up and matched the Wolfguard's gaze.
"Challenge accepted," he said.
Bryngar waited in the duelling pit in the lower decks of the Wrathful. The old wolf was stripped down to the waist, wearing grey training breeches and charcoal-coloured boots, and flexed his muscles and rotated his shoulders as he prepared for his opponent. Arrayed around the training area, commonly used for the armsmen to practice unarmed combat routines, were what was left of the Astartes. The Ultramarine Honour Guard, barring Amrix, who was still recovering from his injuries, and a handful of blood claws. Admiral Kaminska, as the captain of the ship, was the only non-Astartes allowed to attend. She had forbidden any other of the crew from watching the duel. The realization that the Astartes in the fleet were turning on one another was a sign of the worst kind, and she had no desire to discover its effects upon morale if witnessed by them firsthand. She watched as Cestus stepped into the arena, descending a set of metal steps that retracted into the wall once he was within the duelling pit. The Ultramarine was similarly attired to Bryngar, though his training breeches were blue to match the colour of his legion. At the appearance of his opponent, Bryngar swung the chainsword in his grasp eagerly. The assembled Astartes were eerily silent. Even the normally pugnacious blood claws held their tongues and merely watched.
"This is madness," Kaminska hissed, biting back her anger.
No, Admiral, said Safrax, who towered alongside her. It is resolution.
The ultramarine banner-bearer stepped forward. As the next highest-ranking Astartes, it was his duty to announce the duel and state the rules.
This honour duel is between Lysimachus Sestus of the Ultramarines Legion and Bringar Sturmdring of the Space Wolves Legion.
Safrax bellowed, clearly like a carrion call.
The weapon is chainswords, and the duel is to blood from the torso or incapacitation. Limb or eyelos counts as thus, as does a cut to the front of the throat. No armour, no firearms.
Safrax took a brief hiatus to ensure that both Astartes were ready. He saw his brother captain testing the weight of his chainsword and adjusting his grip. Bringar made no further preparation and was straining at the leash.
The stakes are the fate of Captain Motep of the Thousand Suns Legion. To arms!
The Astartes saluted each other and levelled their chainswords in their respective fighting stances. Bringar two-handed and slightly off-centre, Sestus low and pointed towards the ground.
Begin!
Bringar launched himself at Sestus with a roar, channeling his anger into a shoulder barge. Sestus twisted on his heel to avoid the charge, but was still a little sluggish from the earlier battle and caught the blow down his side. A mass of pain numbed his body, resonating through his bones and skull, but the ultramarine kept his feet. Blows fell like hammers against Sestus's defensive stance, his chain blade screeching as it bit against Bringar's weapon. Teeth were stripped away and sparks flew violently from the impact. Two-handed, the ultramarine held him, but was forced down to one knee as the Space Wolf used his superior bulk against him.
"We are not in the muster hall now," he snarled. "I shall give no quarter. I will ask for none."
Sestus bit back and twisted out of the blade lock, using Bringar's momentum to overbalance the Space Wolf. The ultramarine moved in quickly to exploit the advantage with a low thrust, intending to graze Bringar's torso, draw blood, and end the duel. The old wolf was canny, though, and parried the blow with a flick of his sword before leaning in with another shoulder charge. It lacked the sudden impetus and fury of the first, but jolted Sestus's body all the same. The ultramarine staggered, and Bringar swept his weapon downward in a brutal arc that would have removed Sestus's head from his shoulders. Instead, he rolled, and the blade teeth carved into the metal floor of the dueling pit, disturbing the streaks of old blood left by the World Eater's earlier contest. Sestus came out of the roll and was on his feet. There was a little distance between the two Astartes gladiators, and they circled each other warily, assessing strength and searching for an opening. Bringar didn't wait long, and howling, hurled his body at the ultramarine, chainsword swinging. Sestus met it with his blade, and the two weapons came apart with the force of a blow, chain teeth spitting from their respective housings. Bringar cast the ruined chainsaw haft aside and powered a savage uppercut into Sestus's chin that nearly shattered the ultramarine's jaw. A second punch fell like a piston and smashed into his ear. A third lifted him off his feet, hammering into the ultramarine's gut. The sound of Bringar's grunting aggression became dull and distant, as if Sestus was submerged below water as he fought to get his bearings. He was dimly aware of falling and had a vague sense of grasping something in his hand as he hit the hard metal floor of the dueling pit. Abruptly, Sestus found it hard to breathe and realized suddenly that Bringar was choking him. Strangely, the ultramarine thought he heard weeping. With a blink, he snapped back into lucidity and smashed his fists down hard against Bringar's forearms whilst landing a kick into his sternum. It was enough for the Space Wolf to loosen his grip. Sestus head-butted him in the nose, and a stream of blood and mucus flowed freely after the impact. Feeling the ground beneath him again, Sestus ducked a wild swing and lashed out beneath Bringar's reach. The ultramarine wasn't quick enough to avoid a backhand swipe and took it on the side of the face. He was reeling again, dark spots forming before his eyes, hinting that he was about to black out.
Yield!
He breathed, sinking to his knees, his voice groggy as he pointed to the Space Wolf's torso with a chainsword tooth clutched in his outstretched hand. Bringar paused, fists clenched, his breathing ragged, and looked down to where Sestus was pointing. A line of crimson was drawn across the Space Wolf's stomach from the tiny diagonal blade in his opponent's grip. Blood from the torso, Saffrax announced with thinly veiled relief. Cestus wins.